This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 56.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right, so I'm sitting here at the MVP Summit with CJ. We're actually in a little kind of like cubbyhole of a room in a presentation room while they change between sessions here. But having a good week this week?
Absolutely, yeah. It's been really good. Lots of lively discussions.
Yeah, we're doing a cool thing this today where Microsoft has asked a bunch of the MVPs to actually present back to engineering about things. So it's topics that are interesting or topics that are near and dear to us that we want to have ideas with back with engineering, and not so much the engineering presenting to us and getting our feedback on specific things. And so it's kind of a pivot here. Yeah. We just did one of them. I thought that was the exchange that went between engineering, asking questions, here's why we can't do what you just asked, and then here's what specifically would you want. I thought that was freaking awesome.
Yeah, the whole idea was to get us to sit and be presented to and hear about like what's happening in the real world and issues people are struggling with and all that sort of stuff. And so it's kind of like we can stand at the front and present out as often as we want. We get lots of chances to do that, but we don't get many chances to get feedback direct from the source and be presented to on topics of interest. So yeah. It's going really well.
Yeah, pretty cool. So we're going to keep this intro really short and not do like our standard like update and everything, because what we did this week is we sat down with three different groups of people. We sat down with devs, we sat down with IT pros, and we sat down with UX people, user experience people, and wanted to get their opinions on and their take on what is it like working in the cloud today in terms of building solutions for their customers, how do they handle these different things. And so each one of those discussions went anywhere from 15 to 25 minutes. And so we don't want to have an hour and a half long show. So we'll wrap this piece up really quick. We do have a little bit of humor that we did last night. We happened to be sitting at a bar having a couple drinks, just socializing with some friends, and there happened to be a corporate party going on behind us where they had a bunch of helium balloons. And when they were done with them, we just started with them.
Naturally. It had to be done.
So we'll go ahead and play a little bit of chaos here, and then we're going to dive right into talking to dev, and then we'll talk to IT pro, and then we'll talk to UX, and then wrap the show. So curious to get everybody's feedback on how it went.
Right on.
So we're here in Earls in Bellevue, and I'm here with Andrew Connell, SharePoint MVP, and Chris Johnson, my boss. And how's things going?
Actually, I'm really good, Jeremy.
So how's things going, Andrew?
Doing great. MVP Summit was a lot of fun. Having a good time hanging out with everybody and seeing a bunch of cool stuff.
So the Office 365 APIs, what's exciting you about the new releases that we announced at TechEd Europe last week?
Oh my God, the files.
The files are amazing. We get these helium balloons. This is awesome. But I tell you, the other part that's really impressive to me.
It's got to be the tooling.
The tooling is amazing.
Definitely the tooling.
It's so easy to point and click. It's amazing.
So if everybody works it out, these guys have got helium balloons on them, and they're giggling a little bit too hard. But what's your favorite part about the APIs?
It's the authentication. The authentication is amazing. We can sit in and see all I do, and everything's on version. Oh, my God. There's so much stuff you can do. Are you really going to ship this? Even if he goes for it, I don't think his boss is going to go for it. There's just no way. Someone told me when I come to Washington I should do something else and inhale something else. I don't think it was these freaking balloons.
So this will be interesting today. We're doing something a little bit different. We are doing a podcast interview here today with some people from the MVP Summit. I'm sitting down, as we said in the interview or the intro to the show, with a couple different groups of people. Right now we're sitting down with some devs. Somehow I was able to grab five SharePoint/cloud devs, and we were sitting here at about 8:15 in the morning after like the first official day of the summit. So I don't know how in the world I got you guys to do this, but somehow incredibly persuasive. But at any rate, before we dive into this, let me go ahead and let everybody introduce themselves for just a second here.
So I'm Mikael Svensson, or Michael Svensson, if that's easier. Cool. So I'm one of two SharePoint engineers at Puzzle Part from Oslo, Norway.
Fabian Williams, SharePoint dev, DC.
I'm Doug Ware out of Atlanta.
I'm Bjorn Rapp from Oslo, Norway.
And Mark Anderson from Boston, Massachusetts.
There you go. Mark is a frequent, I guess you've been on the show, what, 2-3 times now?
Yeah, I hang around a lot.
We get the one where we kind of went way off the subject and got some stirred up a pot with, was that the InfoPath fight?
I don't know if it was a fight. It was a discussion.
Oh, we didn't fight. Well, CJ was on the other side. We kind of, no, anyway.
Right.
Just kidding. Okay, so yeah, so what I wanted to talk to you guys about was just to get your opinion, just to get your insight on what your life is like as a cloud developer. So all of us have a SharePoint background. All of us have a SharePoint development background, but we really want to look at, you know, what is it like being a cloud developer? 365, Azure, AWS, any of those kinds of things. How is your life different? You know, what kind of tools do you use and stuff? What kind of insights are you getting out of this? I know we have a lot of different backgrounds in this stuff. I know, Doug, you've actually spent a good amount of time building apps for the SharePoint store, correct?
Oh, yeah. I live in Azure every day and have probably since about 2011. So, I mean, a typical day for me, I have, in my production environment, I've got cloud and on Azure, I've got a couple of web roles, a couple of worker roles, service bus, SQL Azure, user interface is happening on SharePoint, stuff's coming out of Azure Blob Storage, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
Do you like it more than like the
Way better.
Way better? Why is it way better?
Right, so especially now they've got all the wrinkles worked out in Visual Studio 2013 and they made it auto-magical. I can do a web deploy of bits into my web role, for example, and I can set breakpoints in that and in my worker role and right-click and say, just I'm going to start debugging now. I can go into the browser, I can start doing some things in Visual Studio. I'm seeing the JavaScript debugging. I click the button, I see it show up on the web role, I step through it, I drop it into the service bus. All of a sudden, I'm hitting a breakpoint in the worker role, and it just happens. It's idiot proof. I mean, even I can do it.
So being doing a lot of Azure dev, do you find yourself, do you have one subscription? Do you have multiple subscriptions that you're using for? How do you do that? That was a two-part question. Yeah, it wasn't really the right answer.
Well, I don't. I know a lot of people use the staging and production switches, but I'm an entrepreneur. I've got a consulting business. I got my product business, you know, which is coming. So cost is a real factor for me. And so I take advantage of the Microsoft BizSpark program.
Gotcha.
On the one side, MVPs get certain benefits. I'm a partner with ActionPack units. So basically, I'm like the guy with the phone cards. And as soon as one of them starts to expire, I'm just getting out the next one.
Burn those trial dollars.
Right, exactly. That's how it's all set up, is around maximizing my use of credits to minimize the amount of money I have to spend. But it's not terribly expensive at the end of the day. My production environment, all that stuff I just rattled off. So that's 4 virtual machines, as web roles, a database, service bus, blob storage, and everything else. I use my $150 credit. And my total spend is like $40 a month.
$40 a month, that's not bad for classic dev. I mean, that's better than running your own environments and everything. So that's.
Oh, yeah. I used to be on Amazon Web Services, and I've now moved everything off of it onto Azure.
So, okay, I don't want to go too long on this, but I'm curious, what was there a specific reason why you pivoted from AWS over to Azure?
So when Azure came out, I thought, these people are crazy. That they're doing this platform as a service thing, right? Because I'm still doing infrastructure.
Right.
Right. So I had a WSS 3.0 was my company website running in an EC2 instance and various other Amazon services for a long time. But I never build VMs anymore. Mm. I just use the roles. So I've evolved personally to the point where I'm using the platform as a service stack instead of the infrastructure as a service stack, and I'm very, very happy with that, not having to configure the details of my machines and their cookie cutters. I had to learn to trust it.
Yeah.
That was probably the main thing. I reached the point where I went, you know, this works fine.
Yeah,
and it's better, and then I made the switch.
Yeah, did you other guys find the same thing, where it's like moving from an on-prem kind of a dev, classic on-prem dev, that you're moving more to like a cloudy kind of a thing, a service thing? So, Fabian, you're nodding your head. What was your experience like?
Well, what was your
first time like?
It was great. It was great. So, as Doug mentioned, the first thing is dropping that big hunker laptop down and just going to something lighter and putting everything in the cloud. That was my first real experience of moving over, where I knew that, you know, I'm no longer going to be spinning up SharePoint server environments on my laptop. The other part is just the tooling. The tooling is excellent. Doug's mentioned again, from Visual Studio, you can do everything. You know, I have my my console inside Visual Studio where I'm spinning up my sites, spinning up my databases and my mobile services, and you know, working with Xamarin also, you know, with mobile services is extremely easy. You know, get a project situated, pull down a project, open it up in Visual Studio, work on it, push it back up. It's already there. So
when you say Xamarin, you're using the Xamarin piece of Visual Studio, or are you using Xamarin like Studio on OS X?
So mixed bag. I'm definitely using more the Visual Studio on the Windows side, okay, because I start off with a Windows project, then I build as an iOS project. However, as I start to do more Mac stuff or just playing around with it, I'll start off sometimes from the iOS side, storyboarding it inside on the Mac, yep, and then move it over into Visual Studio. And the one main change I can say in terms of just, you know, how I manage stuff now is that I'm all in GitHub.
All in GitHub.
All in GitHub.
Right. Yeah. Same. They've made it so simple to deploy stuff,
yep,
straight from GitHub. I saw something the other day, we mentioned, I think on one of the last episodes, where somebody has written a little thing that you can put inside of, a little button you can put in a GitHub project, and it will take the entire thing, take you to a page, prompt you for which, assuming you're already right, logged into your Azure subscription, which region, what's the name of the site, whatever, and it's just deployed to Azure, and it stands up a website for you and stands up a deployment slot and sucks it straight in from a GitHub branch.
It's so easy.
Oh my God,
so easy. And it cuts down your time to market, you know, tremendously.
Kind of makes it fun too. You see all this automation stuff, yeah, really taking all that stuff out of it. It's, yeah, a lot of fun.
The next thing is I only carry a Mac now as well.
There you go. Well, yeah. I can definitely, I wouldn't say sympathize with, yeah, you, because I'm in the exact same boat as you are. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Excellent.
How about you, Mikhail?
Well, yes, my first project was I ported a funny translation service which is out on the internet, which was written in Perl. I'm not going to mention the name of it.
Yeah.
That was my first Azure project. And it's been running as a web role, mm-hmm, for a long while. And then I used SQL Azure as backing for statistics. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was some upgrades going on, and then it was this spring, actually. Mm-hmm. The service went down. And then it was a latency between my web role and SQL Azure. Because, mm-hmm, how do you move the stuff over to SQL in an asynchronous way in a web role. So then I rewrote it, adding a queue. So there's so many services in Azure. So I think they're launching like new services every month.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you ever have a problem, okay, what's the service like? Okay, I can use that service, and same as you do, I use my credits, my $150. I actually have two accounts. So I have $300 I can use every month.
Mm.
But my real issue is, so how should you do this in a real production for a big product, right? So I'm using Visual Studio, I'm deploying, click, 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 it's up there.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you deploy it to dev, test, and as Doug say, well, he's a one-man company. So are you using your users as your test rabbits, or?
So yes and no. Mm-hmm. Right, I have a long background in software as a service.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I'm doing it. No, they don't know I'm doing it.
Right. I have a long background in software as a service, right? And if you're going to run these kind of unattended things, so my small company, I've got, you know, in a given day, a few hundred active users. There are, I've had almost 2,000 installations. Maybe about 10% of those are active, real people using the systems. It's all about telemetry. Right, and early warning systems and that sort of thing. And so I've been in development of the next generation of the products, and things have been stable for the last few months. So it's shaken out, and I really don't generally have issues. Every once in a while I'll get some strange mystery problem that somebody had, and almost always by the time I respond to them a couple hours later, their problem has disappeared. It's some ghost in the internet, yeah, that caused it to happen. So I kind of am experimenting on my users, like anybody who's in software as a service, but the benefit to them is that in previous modes of development where I'm shipping installation media all over the place, right, if I realize I've made a mistake, that's a real problem, because how do I update them? Now, if there's a problem in one of my JavaScript files, for example, I can fix it centrally, and every one of my clients,
yeah,
picks that fix up instantly. I can push, you know, I can turn around a bug fix in a couple hours once I know about it. So over here, if you're dealing with a big population like that, especially against something like SharePoint Online, as I'm dealing with, where there's a level of customization, you know, your defenses are great instrumentation, really serious engineering, good testing before you go out. But even then, as things begin to interact, you're going to discover crazy things. You just can't do test cases. So you have to watch closely and react quickly.
Right. Yeah.
Because we're so used to build servers and having, like, you commit your code, it's being built, it's being pushed out to different environments. I would really like to see the same stuff going on for Azure.
Yeah.
Like building out the different tenants and have it tested, and of course, well, there's always bugs in production. Mm-hmm. And then you probably want to roll out to like to half your users and have multiple front ends, so you like, well, half of them get updated and you catch an error, then they can switch back and forth.
Like some A/B testing kind of stuff. Yeah,
sort of A/B testing and having a way to do rollback.
Yeah. Right. Bjorn, how about you?
Yeah, well, my story is quite a bit different from the others because I used to do a lot of desktop development and come from a heavy C-sharp background, and I used to do VM for each and every customer before.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't have any JavaScript background at all, so I needed to have to learn the stuff when it came, when 2013 on-prem came, and then I had to switch to the to online. Mm. So now I'm doing everything on creating one, like a site collection or site for each customer, and I actually love it right now because it's so easy to deploy and it's easy to uninstall when you do it. So that's what I really love. Yes.
It's funny you say that because that's one of the biggest things that I like about this as well is that it's so easy to get things fired up, share it with somebody. Like I have a website, I'm doing a startup and I want to be able to share the progress of how things are going.
Yes.
We have it set up to where the web site piece of our project, the main client end up piece, there's a bunch of other services that are being used, but we have one branch that is tied it's our production branch. And so whenever we want to go through and just share everything, we just merge stuff over and poof, it just shows up in a website. Yeah. To set that whole thing up took maybe mm-hmm. 3 or 4 minutes the very first time, but it really blows your mind how fast you can share stuff, you can get things up and running, you can fix a problem.
Yeah.
And the tools that we're getting too, with the Azure portal.
Another advantage is that I come from a consulting company with more than 1,000 people, and we have lots of departments. Like we have Java people, we have people from .NET, ordinary programming. So we can now use a lot of resources that were not available for us before, because they can now jump straightly into the and start programming apps without having any proper SharePoint knowledge at all. So we've done some real experiments with that. It works very well.
Yeah.
So we can use our resources a lot more efficiently now. So that's a great advantage for us.
It would seem, I guess, do you also see in that kind of an environment where you've got Java people, you've got .NET people?
Yeah, we have a customer that's got big Java department, and we have like 7-8 people from there. They are not converting, but they can easily jump into a project where SharePoint is online is in, and they can be very productive.
Yeah, so that's cool. So when you do, nice little alarm there. We still have a few more minutes. So that wasn't enough. We're wrapping it up. So do you also see that because you have these different backgrounds and environments, different backgrounds of different types of developers?
Yeah, we have.
They can be able to deploy their stuff to Azure because Azure can support all of these different things, all these different platforms. So you don't have to have, like, I don't have to have a Solaris guy over here in the Solaris box that some IT pros having to manage to stand up a new site or something like that. It's got to simplify that side of it as well quite a bit.
Well, a lot of people from us, they also have a kind of a front background. So they're working with JavaScript, either they're working with from the Java background or Ruby or .NET background. So it's not a big issue for us because they can be, they can give them some kind of requirements and they can build it. And they need to know how to connect to SharePoint and how to do the research, to read the resources.
Mm.
And that works very well.
Mm. Very cool, very cool. So, Mark, you've got a different kind of a background than a lot of people that are sitting here. And a lot of us are talking about, like, you know, Bjorn brought it up too really well about how he didn't have as much experience on the client side stuff from the JavaScript side. And I found that to be a very common thing around the SharePoint space, where when SharePoint 2013 came out and when client side dev, just in general, not just SharePoint, but just client side dev, web front end dev, well, JavaScript and all those client-side technologies, jQuery, Angular, Bootstrap, Ember, all those things are common in the world outside of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But now you see so many, at least from us, I see that the majority of those of us that are sitting around the table and people that are like us of our background, this stuff is brand new to a lot of us, even though it's been around for a while. But this is where your sweet spot has been, you know, for a while now on the side. So what are you seeing? Are you seeing you guys, this is my house, get out of my house, guys, right?
No, come on in, it's a party, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, on some level, it's interesting listening to you guys talk about what you're up to now, because I've been doing this client-side stuff for a long time. SharePoint's been in the cloud for me, in essence, forever, right? I've been using it as a service, and I've been building things in its own, in Pages, but in essence, I was treating it as a service and just doing web development. So I was doing, I've had my way of doing that, and you guys have sort of come in and leapfrogged me. You're going past me because it's like cell phone usage in a third world country. You know, you weren't tethered by the wires,
right?
And I'm sort of, well, I got my ways of doing things, right? And so I'm actually learning a lot from what you're all doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's helping to inform my direction. You know, some of the stuff you've done with Angular, for instance, it's like, you know, it's fascinating to me. Crap, I picked Knockout to learn, you know? So, you know, we all have so many more options now. And so I'm finding that my development style is evolving. I'm actually getting a lot, I've been working a lot more lately on how do I version stuff without using some sort of fancy tool set.
Gotcha.
You know, like how do I load like version 1.2 of something in one site collection and version 1.4 in another site collection and keep those things working well, and how do I upgrade lists and libraries and all that stuff without ever touching the server, without ever building a SharePoint app, because to me that's just way too freaking hard. To me.
I find it
difficult. And I'm sort of working on a more, it's almost like LITE, right? I'm sort of more of a light developer. You guys have always accused me of that. I'll own it.
And I wouldn't say that.
It's not an accusation. But you know, it's just because my approach has been different for a long time, it's still different.
Right.
And so it's a great party. It's so nice to have you guys join me. You know, it was lonely for a long time.
It was funny. You were the pioneer.
Well, hardly. I mean, that's the thing. I was doing what everyone else did.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the whole world has been out there doing this stuff. And you guys, not necessarily you guys at this table, but the SharePoint community and sort of the people who've been .NET developers have had these blinders on for a long time.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's something you've seen when I first started working with SharePoint 2013, you could see where Microsoft was really trying to push the product to be more web dev, more client-side kind of stuff. You really saw that so many people were like, "What? This is all JavaScript stuff, it's all crap, you can't do the right stuff." And you saw like sessions that Scott Hillier did at the SharePoint conference earlier this year. He didn't do anything that was SharePoint related. It was just like we call it enterprise style JavaScript, right? Where you've got to deal with versioning. You try and deal with doing good module type development, and not sticking everything in the global scope. But the whole concept of the global scope, you start explaining some people this. You know, here's what it is, and here's if you create this thing called an IFE, an IIFE, and put your variables in there. You show them, hey, look, here's the code that does that, and they're like, yeah, well, what does that really do for me? And you explain it, and they're like, oh, crap, that's kind of important. It's funny you say that we're learning from you, but I think there's a lot of stuff that we have all brought to the table that we bring in. We try and push it into that client-side space. Yeah. It doesn't work at all, and it's a very bad idea. Well, it works, but it's a very bad idea in the client-side space, so we are learning a lot from it as well. And it's nice to really see that. I don't know how much that happens outside of the space that we traditionally run in, but I can see how much of there's a lot of help going back and forth between the two disciplines, from your background to, I know from my background and other people's background.
Well, I think in most other technology areas, you know, sort of break out of our circle, this stuff goes on all the time, right? I mean, the cross-pollination thing at a small startup is endless. It's just constant. We've all been in this sort of rut, right? We try not to pay attention to what's going on out in the world because it's too much.
Right.
We've got a big space in there now. So I think it's great that, you know, some of the stuff that you and Scott have done, you know, bringing some patterns, you know, enterprise class to JavaScript, it's changed the way I build stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we're bringing skill sets from other disciplines together, that's where really interesting innovation happens.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too. It's like, because I think that we've always complained that the pace of technology is changing so quick. You run into those devs that complain about the fact that it's going so fast. Now it seems to me like it's just flying at a pace. And you subscribe to, there's an email that I get every week from GitHub about the most popular projects. I pop in there, look at a couple of them, and it's like, Nick, by the time I see them, they've got like, you know, 400 stars on it. It's like, are you freaking, this thing is awesome, but no one's talking about it. And all of a sudden it comes out and it gets another like 5,000 stars.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Mikhail, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, I think Mark really touched on it because he's doing service-oriented programming. I mean, he's using a service, pulling data back.
That's true, yeah.
And I've had my head in Visual Studio for so long and used to the way of developing. But now you're sort of, okay, you have to fire up an API call, well, using REST typically now, get the data back, and now you move everything from your code or and then over to JavaScript. And how do you do the asynchronous programming in JavaScript? That took me a long time to wrap my head around using jQuery defer.
Promises.
Just make that work. And then authentication is hard because usually you run in, like, everyone's already authenticated. You don't have to think about it. You're running in the context of the user, and now you suddenly have to, there's OAuth, and how should you do your tokens and refresh tokens. There's a whole different way of programming.
It really is. Doug, do you have something to add to this too?
Yeah, I mean, my perspective is a lot different because I was building distributed systems back in COM and Corba, when what we called Windows DNA, and all of these things. And when the internet became really ubiquitous, it made a lot of those design patterns unworkable because it was slow. Mm-hmm. But it's not slow anymore. And so a lot of techniques that were state-of-the-art or in the late 90s or the early 2000s that fell off simply because of limitations of the technology are now back fully in play. And so I'm using, you talk about asynchronous and thinking about systems as cloud systems. I'm actually using knowledge that I gained working at a company where we were doing internet banking. And if you went to the bank site, you were hitting a data center in California, which was running AIX, which was making a almost SOAP call because we had all these almost standard technologies that we invented ourselves over to our data center, which was then pulling some data out of SQL Server. Some cases it would hit a SDLC network over to a data center in Cincinnati, and it would pull it all together, and it would appear in the browser. Now, we had to do all that rendering on the server side because we couldn't, but we had point-to-point connections between all of these data centers, and when we went into ASP.NET, all of that distributed thinking collapsed. And I think that you're wrong about the SharePoint developers. It's all of the server-side developers everywhere, whether it's PHP or Ruby on Rails or Struts or whatever they use in Java. We were using server-side rendering technologies to overcome network limitations that don't exist anymore.
It's almost going back to client-server, where client is web instead of client being like dumb terminal. Right?
Well, right. The average broadband connectivity speed, now there's still the speed of light and distance factors, but the average broadband connection is faster than the typical local area network when Windows 95 came out.
Jesus, I didn't realize that. It's a cool stat.
Yeah, so, this is, I think a lot of people, the older we get, we have some gray hair sitting around the table. The older we get, the more we realize that these are not like groundbreaking changes. They're evolutions of patterns, right? So we had client server back in the, when was that? Late 80s, early 90s. I mean, I know I was there. And we're seeing this. We see this sort of slow pendulum going back and forth between centralized processing and distributed processing. The technologies change because some of the underlying capabilities change. I mean, I'm totally agreeing with you.
Yeah.
And what I think people don't realize is that this pace of change that we see, while it's faster now, it's not new. Yeah. I mean, we're always looking at new technologies. Yeah. We ought to always have our blinders folded back behind our heads so that we can look out and see, well, who's doing the best stuff in web development, cloud development, whatever, and borrow from those things, as opposed to, what's the most, well-known SharePoint development technique? We ought to be looking outside.
It's a good point, Mark Bjorn.
Yeah, I said I didn't have any JavaScript background. That's not completely true because I worked with it in the 90s. In 96 when Netscape came, and I should have kept it that way because it disappeared for some time, and now it's emerged again with the client development. So I deeply regret that I didn't keep the knowledge that I had that time.
It's very similar to my experience where I found that I was... When I started teaching SharePoint stuff, you talk a little bit about JavaScript to people, and it's like, how many of you consider yourselves strong JavaScript developers? And like five or six people raise their hand. Yes. I'm like, okay, now how many of you are like me, which is I'm a JavaScript developer, but I've really just been stealing stuff off ESPN.com, how to do drop-down lists for the last 10 years. It looked really cool, and then how do I put that in my site, right? Yeah, right. Of course, it's always in the global scope, and then it breaks, and you're like, why the hell is it breaking? So, Fabian, yeah.
No, I think it hits home right here, because for me, I'm one of the last adopters. I held out, trying to do client-side stuff until I had no other choice. So now my biggest decision points are, what do I learn first? I'm pinging John Papa on Twitter, hey, you need to help me with learning Angular. Then I go to GitHub and like I really rob stuff from there and just try to work it on my own. The benefit though is that I can quickly spin up sites in Azure. I can test stuff out. I can kill it. I can come back. The speed of the pace of which you can learn now is just so fast.
Yeah.
You know, you almost have no time. You know, to decide which lane you want to be in.
You have to. I've had to apply the concepts that I've done. The learning, I guess, I've done with SharePoint, which is. Doing SharePoint for 10 years, but there are many places where SharePoint, I don't have a clue what I'm doing there. Like around the BI stack, no clue, right? I didn't learn what Power BI was until just a few months ago. You can't know it all.
Yep.
You have to pick and choose and focus, and you could be an academic and learn all of it, but we all get to also pay bills. And so you focus on what's going to be good for your project. So we've had a great discussion here. I don't want to go too long here, but I do want to pop something on you guys at the very end. CJ and I started to do something kind of new. This will be fun to see what comes off the top of your head. I intentionally did not tell you about this ahead of time. But CJ and I started doing something we call our picks. And so we basically said, let me pick a link or maybe pick something that I think is cool. What's interesting to me right now? What am I doing? What's a fun thing? It doesn't have to be technology related. I'll throw my first one out. Mine's GoPro, right? Because we just got these, for those of you who can't see, we're using a GoPro to do this, and hopefully we can have a cool video. It'll be on YouTube sometime soon from this episode. But yeah, they gave us GoPros at the MVP Summit. So yeah, that was way cool. Kind of a nice step up from the USB keys and the flashlights.
Yeah, no doubt.
But anyway, so give me just a pick. What is something that's cool to you? It could be a JavaScript library. It could be some other library that's cool, some tool that you're using, some cool book that you're reading or something like that. Just throw it out there. I'm going to try and go around to everybody. I'm trying to do this in about 1 minute, right. Really quick. Fabian,
Xamarin. It's all about Xamarin. It's all about cross-platform mobile development where you can target iOS, Android, and Windows. Cross-platform libraries, shared libraries. That's all it is.
Cool. Yeah. Xamarin, there's one.
Yeah, Xamarin for me too, because Xamarin. I have about an Android, about an iPhone, and I have a Windows phone, so now I'm deeply into that too.
Very cool. Mark, you got one?
I'm having a ball writing things like single-page applications. That means a lot of different things, but just sort of playing in that space is just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Writing some fun code.
Identity. I'm very excited now that we're coming up on Windows 10 and seeing what's happening with Azure Active Directory. I think that that's the last major drag to break down the walls between to make everything cloudy, right? At that point, when we can deal with identity and have it be fully cloud and have it be easy, then everybody will build apps the same way, whether they're in their data center or they're in their cloud, because they were not the impedance. That's a new word I just made. The impedience is going to be gone.
We won't bleep that one out.
All right.
So, you know, it's funny you say that too, because what did you see last week or 2 weeks ago, Amazon Web Services released an identity product that is true Active Directory, that's like join computers in the cloud and all that kind of stuff, more than what Azure can do. I love seeing that because I love what the Azure guys are doing, but now there's like some hardcore competition going that people got to innovate on each other now.
Yeah, and so, it's going to be great because that stuff's icky and nasty to do underneath the covers, and I think it's a place where a lot of people quit right off the bat.
It was complicated. It's confusing.
Complicated.
It's heady. There's not much you can put your fingers on, and it's hard to draw the whole thing out.
Because there's no picture. It all happens invisibly under the wire.
Exactly right. These stupid tokens.
Yeah.
Miguel.
Yeah. So all jet lagged, I'll ping in on the Xamarin thing. So I haven't touched it yet, but I'm reading blogs about it. I met this other MVP yesterday. So I'm following his blog. Mm. He blogs about Xamarin. It seems really cool because I want to use my C# knowledge when I do stuff.
Very cool. Guys, thank you very much for taking the time out this morning to do this. Hopefully we'll make sure we all grab a good coffee to kind of stay awake for the first few sessions, but be a good summit. And thanks again for taking the time to do this.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Great.
Welcome back, everybody. We've managed to grab six of our close friends and MVPs on site here at MVP Summit on the Microsoft Redmond campus. And we're sitting outside in the commons on a beautiful, sunny Redmond day. And we thought we'd talk a little bit about IT pro topics and what it means to folks in the cloud world. So first up, a quick round of introductions. So let's just head from left to right.
Elaine Van Bergen from OBS Melbourne, Australia. So I'm an architect down there.
Mark Rhodes from Empired in Australia. I'm a cloud services architect.
Michelle Caldwell, North America. I'm with Avanade and I'm a director of collaboration.
Victor Villene works as a SharePoint architect or Azure architect nowadays at Acando in Sweden.
And Thomas Fuchten, SharePoint MVP based out of Belgium.
Fantastic. You want to start us off, CJ?
So I talked to a bunch of people and they all say, move to the cloud and my career is dead. because they're used to, you know, building servers and installing and running stuff on-prem. And so we thought we'd talk a little bit about what the movement to the cloud over the last few years has meant to IT pros and sort of riff on that.
Well, Michelle, you want to kick us off?
Sure. So what I've seen, and I'm not an IT pro myself, but I work with a lot of IT pros, and I think right now is a really exciting time to be an IT pro. I disagree with my career's over, life is, you know, dead and move on. I think it's more challenging now with cloud and hybrid scenarios for IT pros to push themselves beyond the traditional IT pro skills that they've had in the past and really grow and evolve. So that's what I've seen.
Cool. Mark?
Yeah, I've every session I've done on the topic of cloud has ended with someone asking, what does this mean for IT pros, right? So, and there's so much fear out there about it. I've been saying it's great, just embrace it. You're going to get rid of all the stuff you don't want to do, like provisioning mailboxes, setting up VMs. Who wants to do all this really tedious, menial work when you can go and set up this massive hybrid deployment? That's where I see the cool
stuff. So you're saying a little bit more of like architect kind of stuff and more kind of like planning and strategy kind of stuff, and not so much of like the remedial stuff or the stuff that is more like like just, you know, another plus one operation of like another mailbox, another account, something like that. That kind of stuff, that can all be taken off because it's not so much like thought work and stuff like that. It's more, the more creative stuff comes in from the cloud, allows you to get rid of all that just monotonous work instead of the creative side.
That's it. And, you know, if you're getting rid of all of that old work, you've got to do something with your time, right? You're going to open the doors to all this really fantastic new work.
Yeah. That's cool. Cool. Yeah. Thomas.
Yeah. One of the new challenges, for example, for IT pros in the cloud world is the identity and authentication piece. Azure AD, ADFS, DuraSync, all these new technologies that we've not been accustomed to in the past can, they're great new opportunities for us too.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too. This morning I did interview some developers, and one of the big things for them was the improvements in identity very recently. One of the things I brought up too is that, you know, we saw that, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, probably 2 weeks ago now, that we saw that Amazon came out with their own directory service product that kind of rivals Azure AD. And in a sense, you know, you kind of look at it and say it's almost more AD than Azure AD is. So it's nice to, from my perspective, it's great to see that kind of competition to be pushing the Azure guys even farther. So yeah, the identity thing, that's definitely huge.
Yeah, it's true. The Amazon stuff is indeed more a traditional Active Directory. You can even join computers to it, I guess.
Yes.
I thought. So yeah, it's very interesting to see where they're heading.
Yeah, it's like full bore identity, it seems, where like Azure AD is more users and groups identity and apps, but not so much the computer stuff and group policy stuff and everything. Yeah, Victor, you had something to add to it?
One thing I think is really interesting is something that the developers have been very familiar with the latest few years is the agile approach. As an IT pro, you can now be more agile. The operations can be more agile to respond to requests from external companies and internal resources, etc. You don't have to cuddle with a blinking service or tripping over wires. And as Mark said, you don't have to focus on those basic tasks. You can focus on the architecture, as you mentioned, scaling out really fast if you need that, scaling out in a short time, or scaling up. That kind of agile approach to an IT pro.
So looking at it from that perspective, do you see things being more, so it sounds like you described like the hardware side, the physical side of it's gone from it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're all painting a very positive picture of it and all the things that it removes for you. What about the challenging side of it, or any kind of downsides to it? What new kind of challenges does this kind of an approach bring to us? Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can continue. You're moving up a couple of steps on the ladder as well. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about the infrastructure that you can use as a service, but also platform as a service, the IT pros has to know that kind of stuff. We mentioned identity and those things as well. You have to broaden your skills as an IT pro and not just focus on those servers standing in a rack somewhere. Mm. So, which is also fun being an IT pro, that you have new stuff to learn.
Cool, yeah, Michelle.
And I'll just continue on what you were saying, Victor. Soft skills are going to be really, really important for the IT pros moving forward. As they move up the stack, right, they move up through the architecture, having those skills to help with strategy, to give an opinion because they know what's going on in the platform, and to be able to work with the business more proactively on that. I think that's a huge challenge or opportunity, however you want to look at it, for IT pros who traditionally maybe didn't have to have that level of interaction before.
Gotcha.
We talked to obviously loads of IT pros in our line of work, and one thing I've noticed is that I used to call the I used to call the IT department the no department, right? Because every time you go ask them, they say no. And usually it's out of, usually it's well meant, right? They're just so busy. And definitely something I hope we see is that just, you know, the bread and butter stuff is taken care of for them. And they're able to move up the stack, as you said, and do more higher value things. Like from an office team perspective, one thing we're excited about is having them provisioning less mailboxes and having to do all the table stakes, bread and butter stuff, and rolling out the new version of Office, right? Because usually they're licensed for years in advance, and it's the problem of enough time and effort to go get it rolled out. That's usually the problem, not a money or a licensing problem. Yeah. So just having them given more time to do things like that, as an example, is hopefully pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Mark, what about you?
I've got a whole heap of challenges, actually. The first one is, even if you look at like Azure, right, it's so broad that getting across everything is next to impossible. Right? I don't know anyone who's gotten across all of Azure yet. Two, things are changing so fast, it's so hard to keep up with them. You know, there's new features coming in. We're learning about them today, right? So all these amazing new features, unless you're focused like a laser on that little area, you're not going to find out about all these new features.
Yeah.
And the third challenge as an IT pro in particular is that, well, Michelle said that IT pros are going to have to get soft skills. It's exactly right, because business guys are now going straight up to websites, signing up with a credit card. They're not going for the IT team. IT team's got to now deal with that. So it's a challenge for them.
So that sounds like a governance kind of an issue, being able to kind of have control over what, centrally have control and insight over what the organization is using, what their technical footprint is all over the place. But still enabling these different groups and divisions within the organization to run off and go do something, to actually get stuff done, because it may not, what the IT guys are not, what the IT department is not providing is not what is needed by that specific business, or by as a whole, the company as a whole is not prepared to get into, to make a capital investment around that area. And they can say, look, you can go spin off your own little thing and not just say that if this is what you're looking for, you don't just have to kill it because we don't have it in on-prem, or because we don't support it as the IT pro, as the IT group within the organization.
Yeah. Sounds right to me.
It's funny you say that too, about like the things that you can, how do you stay on top of all this stuff? I think that's one of the things that we joke about with the podcast, is that we've always got content on a roll up of what's new, because the Azure comes out with 50 new things, like seems like every Tuesday. So it's like super easy to just have new stuff to talk about. But
But one of the things I was going to add is I think it's even interesting to change the way you think about stuff. So, you know, really simple example, one of our IT guys used Azure for the first time. He's like, my SharePoint environment's broken. How do I debug it? I'm like, you don't.
Yeah.
Just hit delete, spark up a new one. It's going to be this quick. And as soon as he knew that, he's like, of course, right, done. I know how to think now. But it is that whole change of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other piece is, do you leave your test and dev environment on 24 hours a day? No, it's going to cost you a lot of money if you do, but internal IT, you just don't think about that stuff, right? Whereas on Azure, you want to be turning that stuff off.
That's quite the grapefruit over the plate to talk about our startup, but we'll hold off on doing that.
Another episode, maybe.
Yeah, another episode, that'd be great, yeah. How many of you guys do you see customers are using? So I assume everybody here, we're all 365, generally speaking. So we all have at least a footprint there or some experience there. And Azure is a natural kind of pivot to, or an extension, I should say, to Office 365, doing customizations there. How many of you see people using like other clouds and interfacing or integrating them with Office 365? Do you guys see anybody doing that? Any of your customers doing it? Or yes?
I do.
Michelle?
So I've seen some of our larger enterprise customers using Amazon Web Services tied into the platform with Azure, Office 365. You know, I think the challenge moving forward for cloud is going to be for enterprises, large enterprises that are going to have footprints across all these different providers, how do they manage that in a unified fashion?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not just managing Azure, and now you've got Amazon and Office 365 and maybe five different other providers. So the IT organization is going to need a better way to manage that.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Yeah, so having a good footprint, a 10,000 foot view of all of my clouds. Like, I need a sky view. I don't need just a cloud view.
That's right.
I need a sky view.
That's right.
Do you even think like another provider like AWS or Azure is really SharePoint in the cloud? That's an interesting question, right? It's like,
do you mean like when you put like IaaS, is that what you mean?
Yeah. VMs so, and Azure, so is that considered like doing SharePoint in the cloud?
Yeah, well, I guess so. And, you know, that's a discussion we're having internally. I think that people understand virtual machines, so it's the easiest thing to jump onto Azure or Amazon and go with virtual machines. They don't really, it's a big jump to go with the PaaS side of stuff. Yeah. We're certainly trying to push people there, but it is just that leap too far. So, you know, probably, I mean, if you think,
skipping stone type approach.
That's what we're thinking. You know, if you think a year ago, our customers were scared of the cloud. Now they're not, they want it, but they're not quite that far forward. So maybe another year and it'll be easier.
So going off on that too, Richard, go ahead.
Another perspective from Amazon versus Azure, coming from not North America. Basically, there are none providers than Microsoft Azure in the world globally. Mm-hmm. Amazon is only US. So the legal stuff and all that kind of stuff, they are not certified in that way that's required in Sweden, for instance. So basically, Azure is the only possibility for if you want that kind, except the local players,
third-party
of course.
Hoster, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. Is Rackspace an option overseas?
No.
Really?
No, it's only North America.
Wow. That's a hell of a, I didn't realize that. That's a big benefit there.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something, too, about going back to this idea of, like, of using IaaS for hosting Azure. IaaS for hosting SharePoint. What does the story look like then for how many of your customers are using IaaS either in AWS or in Azure to host SharePoint for production farms? And then part B is how many of your customers are using that as a DR scenario, as a standby DR scenario? Is that a common thing that you're seeing?
Yeah, I don't have any customers that are using Azure to host their production SharePoint environments, but I do have customers who use it for DR. Yeah, absolutely.
Are they using the disaster recovery stuff that's in the new offering that Azure uses? Or
Yes.
Oh,
they have pilots running, yeah.
I actually work for a cloud provider, so while we have stuff in Azure, we've also got our own cloud, obviously, and we've got about 50 or 60 customers who are hosting SharePoint up in our cloud. And it works great. I mean, there are some limitations, mostly around the integration with identity, right? Because most of them will have their own Active Directory up in that cloud, right? Just for that purpose.
Right.
So things like user profile sync, it doesn't really work that well. So we tend to ignore that functionality, but it's quite a popular option in Australia.
What we're finding is some of the easiest workloads to start with is really websites. So we do have some production websites sitting on Azure, actually in virtual machines due to specific requirements they wanted there. Then we've got a lot of dev and test. It's not necessarily that we couldn't have production. You know, the size of those farms would be fine. But again, it's a starting point for customers. They're a lot more comfortable having a dev or a test in there than they are going straight to prod.
Don't have the appetite to really bet on the farm or to bet
not
the farm.
Not quite yet.
They don't want to bet the farm on the cloud just yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michelle.
So I'm working with a really large customer right now, and they have they've kind of moved to the cloud a little differently. They are doing Azure SharePoint with Azure 2013 with Project Server 2013. It's a highly customized app, heavy workloads. It ties back into their line of business data behind the firewall, and it's some very highly restricted IP-based information. So for that workload, they're going in Azure. For the other workloads that have been traditionally on-prem, they're going to the cloud. They went Azure first, highly complex app, then they're moving the simpler loads to Office 365.
Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting.
I've got a quick question. We've got a couple of masters at the table. And just to throw a slight curveball here, what do you think that program would have been like had it just been Office 365? Because I know there's a ton of IT pro focused stuff in that program, and how do you think it would have changed and before we get rained on?
Well, they'd already started to integrate a bunch of that into the program, because I guess the way I look at it when I talk about SharePoint, you've got to know cloud and you've got to know on-prem, because customers need to know the difference.
Gotcha.
So I would not have liked to see a program that was only 365.
Yeah.
It's just one of the options. But yeah, I mean, more content on that would be great. This IT pros are busier than ever with this cloud stuff, I think.
Sure. Yeah, about one third of the last course was about 365 and identity management and that kind of stuff. So it was already in it and was planned for that. And it was changed from MCM to MCSM, a solutions master. So it wasn't just about the on-prem stuff. It was, we were talking a lot about the cloud.
Gotcha.
And preparing for that.
Okay, so we're going to start to kind of wrap this up because it's starting to sprinkle a little bit harder before we get completely dumped on here. Let me pop a little something on you. CJ and I started doing something recently. At the end of our shows, we call them our picks. And so what we do at the picks is that just what is like the one thing that is interesting to you, what things you're working on, what's, you know, not personal, I mean like outside of work stuff not a personal thing. You don't have to do anything epic right now. But like, you know, a book that you're reading, some new cool technology, you know, that kind of stuff. All kinds of stuff this morning. So it's meant to be a rapid fire thing, 10, 15 seconds a piece. So I'm just going to pick somebody at random. So just come up with something. So
okay,
start with you, Thomas.
I'm currently busy with an epic battle for my getting things done productivity stuff. I have most IT folks, I have a huge mailbox, and that is my main priority outside work now, getting control back of my inbox.
So. Oh, excellent. Yeah. Zero
absolutely.
Inbox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark, how about you?
I'm reading a book right now called Tubes, Behind the Scenes of the Internet. And it's fascinating, actually, to hear about how this stuff came about. Not the old internet, like 70s. We're talking about 1999 onwards. It's really interesting.
That's cool. Do you know the author?
Maybe.
Maybe know the author. We'll have to put a link to it in the show notes. Good books that other people like us that are reading. Always interested in that. Elaine, how about you?
I have a serious backlog of Xbox One games. When it gets above the console, you know, I'm like, I've got to get back into these. So that's next.
That's awesome. What's the first game?
I'm not sure.
Pull one off the top. Pull one random.
Look, I'm trying to decide whether I go with the Halo stuff that's about to come out, or if I go back and you know, dig down in the backlog.
Awesome. Michelle, how about you?
Well, for me right now, looking at extending Office Graph is a big thing we're kind of doing kind of in our spare time. I don't have spare time, but I find it really interesting where that's headed, and that's kind of what I'm looking into right now. And then Doctor Who. I watch a ton of Doctor Who with my kids. So.
That's awesome. Victor, how about you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to do a lot of things right now, both personal and business-wise, but the biggest projects I have right now is some home remodeling at home. Preparing a couple of new rooms at home and not doing any tech stuff. That's my way of relaxing and getting my great ideas, etc.
Gotcha. So,
nice. That's good.
Very cool. Well, guys, thank you very much for taking a few minutes out of your day. I'm sorry for the sprinkles, but really do appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully our listeners got a lot out of this. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.